The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone, where local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.FM is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO abduction phenomenon. Our guest today is Stephen Bassett. Stephen is a political activist, disclosure advocate, and the executive director of Paradigm Research Group, or PRG. Founded in 1996, to end a government-imposed embargo on the truth behind extraterrestrial-related phenomena. He has spoken to audiences around the world about the implications of disclosure, the formal confirmation by heads of state of an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. He has given over 1,200 radio and television interviews, and PRG's advocacy work has been extensively covered by national and international media, including being featured on CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, The Washington Post, and The New York Times. In 2013, PRG organized a citizen hearing on disclosure at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. PRG recently launched a new exopolitical podcast out of Washington, D.C., the Disclosure Wire, based in the National Press Building, two blocks from the White House. Bassett has appeared in many documentary films, and his lectures and interviews are well represented on YouTube. His main work can be found at paradigmresearchgroup.org, and his podcast can be found at disclosurewire.org. Now, if we took the time to talk about all of his work over the years, so we wouldn't have time to interview him. So I will just say welcome to the show, Stephen.
David, as always, it's good to be with you.
Well, thank you. It's good to have you. And now, many of our listeners, being with the UFO phenomenon or ufology, know about your work and know about Paradigm Research Group. But for those of our listeners who are not familiar with us, tell us about Paradigm Research Group.
Paradigm Research Group was set up in 1996 to pursue the resolution of the what is then called UFO extraterrestrial issue, now called UAP, appropriately, and to do it by political means. I did this because I'd come to the conclusion that the reason why we were still seeing all of these sightings and all these events being reported and the thousands of books being written and so forth, and yet the government had not acknowledged the extraterrestrial nature of these reports, was not science. There had been enough science amassed to prove it many times over, even as early as the 1950s. So if it wasn't science, what was it? It was politics. the decision to what I call embargo, the reality of the extraterrestrial presence from the American people, was a political decision made for national security reasons. Mm-hmm. Justifiable, to be fair, under the circumstances of the 1940s and early 1950s, and a legal policy. And so essentially, I'm a political activist trying to end a government policy that I called the truth embargo, and to achieve an outcome, which is very well defined. That outcome is disclosure, capital D. And disclosure, capital D, is very simple. It is a confirmation of the extraterrestrial presence by the heads of state to their people. In other words, the president of the United States confirms to the American people there is an extraterrestrial presence. That's all. It's not all the rest of the information. It's not all the secret files. It's simply that confirmation. Yes, we are not alone. That is called disclosure with a capital D. And that has been the goal of the Paradigm Research Group from the day it was formed, and why I am doing this work.
Okay. And what about your podcast, the Disclosure Wire? Tell us about that.
Disclosure Wire is a podcast I hope to get going very soon. I have set it up. It has a website. It has a YouTube channel. It's also hooked to my Paradigm Research Group YouTube channel. And I have an introductory video up there, which is, I think, revealing. It's helpful. That kind of says where I'm at and where I'm going with this. But I haven't actually started it, because the events taking place right now are coming so fast. And there are so many of the podcasts out there that are interviewing people left and right, which is great. I mean, it's an explosion of podcasts on this issue, that I really want to focus on these developments and get to a place where I felt I could do something that was a little different. So hopefully soon I will actually start putting up more videos. This is not live. It's a podcast at the disclosurewire.org website. That will be one of the projects that PRG is doing this year.
Very good. So people should, our listeners should keep track of your work at paradigmresearchgroup.org.
Yes, that's the main thing.
Yeah.
And they can follow me on Twitter, Steve Bassett. They can follow me on Facebook, Steve Bassett, one word. I'm also on LinkedIn. They can check the Disclosure Wire directly at disclosurewire.org. And when they go to my website, they can subscribe to the free press, free updates list very easily. The link's up the top. I definitely encourage people to go to two particular places on my website where there's enormous resources about what's going on right now. The first one is under Resources Print Media Archive. If you go there, punch through, you will see thousands of articles linked chronologically from the present to the past. And if you go to 2017, you can find the first articles about the To the Stars Academy. Going forward, there's about 850, 60, 70 earmarked and read articles relating to all of this unfolding, specifically relating to what's unfolding, about 850 articles. And then under Issues To the Stars Academy Media, you can find about 160 videos, video interviews, news interviews, and coverage of this process going on since, going back 3.5 years. And that is a huge resource. So I encourage people to look there.
So I was going to ask about the To the Stars Academy of Arts and Sciences. Wouldn't this constitute disclosure?
Oh, no. Disclosure is capital D. It is defined by the activist movement. There's no ambiguity. Disclosure is an event. It is the confirmation event from the head of state. It only occurs when the president of the United States or the president of another country comes forward and confirms the extraterrestrial presence and probably provides evidence or what have you. That is disclosure, capital D. Everything else is disclosure, small d. The process, the small d, the revealing of things. And so when something comes out and somebody brings forward some evidence or a witness comes forward, that's small d disclosure. That's more of the revealing of the information.
Right.
But that's not the event. That's not the confirmation event. And until we get the confirmation event, we're going to continue to go round and round and round in circles on this.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's two things your listeners absolutely need to understand and know if they want to make sense of what's happening right now. And I'm telling you, it's not easy. I've been in this for 25 years, and I'm struggling to make sense. One, United States government, meaning those within our government who have a need to know or have to know because they're directly engaging it, has known about an extraterrestrial presence since 1947, latest, possibly sooner, possibly 41, possibly a little sooner than that, but mm-hmm. but it definitely by 47. And the number of people within our government that has known that has simply grown over the years. And number two, the United States government made the national security decision that it would do everything in its power within the limits of the constitutional republic and freedom of speech that we have and other rights to contain, to literally embargo this issue from the American people and prevent the American people from knowing the reality of the extraterrestrial presence as fact. That's called the truth embargo. My name, if you use it, Venmo me a dime. If you understand those two things, then you can kind of make sense of what's going on. Because if you think the government just found out about the ET presence, or the government's never been hiding anything about this, then what's going on right now is not going to make any sense at all.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, Luis Elizondo, with the To the Stars Academy, has said that disclosure is not an event, it's a process, and that process has begun. Does that put it in a nutshell? Or
Luis Elizondo was one of my heroes.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be a major historical figure, but he's mistaken. Disclosure, and it's a matter of understanding. I mean, it is a confusing thing.
Mm-hmm.
Disclosure, capital D, is a process. Small d is a process. Capital D disclosure is a term invented specifically to refer to the confirmation event. Now, if someone wants to say confirmation event, that's fine. But disclosure with a capital D is a term I came up with, not small d, capital D, to create what I call the prize at the end of the activist path, the prize at the end of the activist movement. You always have to have a prize. Civil rights law, women's right to vote, amendment, whatever. If you don't have a prize, people are not going to commit their time and resources and even take risks to support the movement.
Mm-hmm.
So it's both. We're having disclosure with a small d. The disclosure process has been going on since the press release was accidentally put out by the Army Air Force Base in Roswell. Okay, small d disclosure has been going on 47.
Right.
Capital D disclosure has not happened yet. No head of state has ever confirmed the extraterrestrial presence. Until we get capital D disclosure, we're going to continue to go round and round and get nowhere.
Right.
And that's simply no longer acceptable.
Well, even with these videos that have been leaked, there are those that are still trying to poo-poo the videos and say, oh, they're airplanes. Well, what about that airplane, quote unquote, that went into the ocean? Are they looking for the wreckage or what? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. These craft can fly in and out of the water with ease. Come, go, doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Which has been witnessed many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is just one more example that they're technologically well advanced.
Yes. And I would rather think that they were, extraterrestrial than to think that Russia or China have that kind of technology that they're able to come off our shores or over our country with that kind of technology and with impunity. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, let me read you. Okay, here, of course, this is not live, but let me read you a press release I'm about to put out, all right?
Okay.
Which will answer your question quite well. This is about to go out to a very large number of media. Okay. Washington, D.C. PRG Executive Director Stephen Bassett has issued the following comments regarding the recent New York Times article leaking, quote unquote, parts of the classified and unclassified report from the Department of Defense to the Senate Intelligence Committee due no later than June 26, 2021. Quoting from the article, Washington, American intelligence officials have found no evidence that aerial phenomena witnessed by Navy pilots in recent years are alien spacecraft. My comment. Ignore this. It's a lie. Of course. The DOD can't say otherwise at this point. Quote from the article. The report determines that a vast majority of more than 120 incidents over the past two decades did not originate from any American military or other advanced U.S. government technology, the official said. That determination would appear to eliminate the possibility that Navy pilots who reported seeing unexplained craft might have encountered programs the government meant to keep secret. This is what is important. This is what matters. The United States has the highest military technology in the world, period. Everyone in the Pentagon, down to the floor polishers, knows this. U.S. military technology is equal to or greater than that of China, Russia, Canada, UK, France, Peru, Somalia, and the rest of the 200 countries and sovereign entities. Therefore, there is only one option left to explain the not 120 incidents over the past two decades, but thousands of incidents since 1947, and that is extraterrestrial, period. The DOD has just confirmed the ET presence in the only way it could, in cooperation with the Senate Intelligence Committee, to provide an appropriate basis for congressional hearings to be called for by Mark Warner and Marco Rubio. You are witnessing a public relations-driven extrication process. Your government is finally having to extricate itself out from under a 74-year institutional lie in order to soften the blow, look as good as possible, get as much credit as possible, or simply to get the job done. Or put another way, principal institutions and persons have to lie their way out of the lie. Works for me. So that's about to go out to a whole lot of media. I think that answers your question.
I believe it does. And I need to take a moment just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to the program We Are Not Alone that just recently came back online after this long, hard year, and hopefully will stay online. Our times may change. We're in a new time slot now, and I don't even know if we'll be in this time slot come July when this airs, but that's Monday at the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. 2 to 3 p.m. So, once again, WHFR.FM, station making waves. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with Stephen Bassett of the Paradigm Research Group. Now, you were talking about, this article. Is this a New York Times article or one that you have written?
The New York Times article came out yesterday, authored by Brian Barnes and Helene Cooper. Helene Cooper was the staff New York Times writer that was a co-author of the two 2017 December 16th New York Times articles that, of course, out of the ATIP program, brought forward the gun camera footage clips and talked about Harry Reid, Bigelow, and all of that, major stories that really changed the landscape completely.
Right. I noticed that on your website, Paradigm Research Group, you used to have the Paradigm Clock, and it used to be prominent on your homepage. Whatever happened to that?
It's in suspension. I used it for many years as a way to draw attention to disclosure, capital D disclosure, confirmation. And I started it retroactively in 1947 at the same time that the Bulletin of Atomic Sciences launched their doomsday clock, which they launched because the scientists at the time were pretty worried that we might not have a nuclear war, which was a particularly valid worry. So they created this clock on it is midnight on this clock is nuclear war. And so they set it at 7 minutes to midnight. And over the ensuing years, they would move it closer or further away from midnight, depending upon the geopolitical realities. And that clock got a lot of attention every time they changed it, get news conferences. And recently they changed it again, and the press covered that. And they set it to 100 seconds to midnight, a minute and 40, which is the closest to midnight nuclear war that the clock has ever been set. So I created the paradigm clock. And the paradigm clock was retroactively launched at 7 minutes to midnight. And then I had a site, pages there that showed how that clock has moved closer or further away from disclosure over the many years. Mm-hmm. I didn't think disclosure was going to take that long, but it went on and on and on. And so finally, that's kind of, it's there, but I'm not keeping it up to date.
Okay.
But it has its place in history, and maybe I'll restart it again. I don't know. I'm not going to have time. Disclosure is coming very soon, I think. So it was just an activist device, an educational device, to try to get people to understand the idea of disclosure, capital D, the confirmation.
So where would you say that clock is right now?
About 10 seconds to midnight.
10 seconds to midnight. Right. So what can we expect, if anything, from this so-called promise of revelations of by the U.S. government as to the UFO reality?
This is a complicated question, and with a complicated answer. And again, if people will go to my website under resources and check the print media article and start reading all the earmarked articles back to 2017, and also go under issues to the TTSA media page. It's under Two Stars Academy. You slide over to media and start reviewing some of the media coverage and the statements, public statements and presentations by TTSA people such as Luis Elizondo and Christopher Mellon. They can get the bigger picture. I'm going to give it to you in as few words as possible. What is going on now is a public relations extrication process to get the U.S. government out from under the truth embargo that's 74 years on. And all the efforts to get that done prior to the last couple of years failed. During the Cold War, every effort had no chance at all. And there were efforts to get hearings and to get the truth out in the 50s. There were some very important, very, very substantial people back there trying to do it. No chance. So it was locked down for 44 years. And by then it was completely institutionalized. So even when the Cold War ended, it was not easy to get it done, to end the truth embargo and tell the people the truth. Lawrence Rockefeller made a move. He tried to get Bill Clinton's administration to go for these files and get this done. Clinton was stonewalled and lied to by his own government, by his own DOD and so forth, and it failed. There have been other instances, other efforts, including some of mine, some of my colleagues, all failed. In something changed, and it was in October of 2017. When an organization was launched and announced called the To the Stars Academy of Arts and Science, which really doesn't mean anything. I mean, so what? There's plenty of organizations being created all the time. However, the moment I went to the initial website and read the bios of the people that were part of this group, they made up this group, I realized that they were all from the military intelligence complex, from classified programs with high security clearances, including the CIA, the DIA, the DOD, as well as political operatives and scientists. And at that moment, I knew something profound had happened, namely that starting that day, October 11, 2017, the disclosure process, small d, was being led by the military intelligence complex. Now that, of course, had never happened before. So how, why, what? The what had been done is what had happened was this, as best as I can tell, because the principals will not tell the origin story for reasons I can understand, but they're not telling the origin story. Mm-hmm. So what I think happened is that a group of people inside the MIC, Military Intelligence Complex, personally had arrived at some point to the conclusion that this embargo needed to end, that it was no longer a good policy. It was embarrassing, it's destructive, it undermined the trust, and too many people had figured it out already. It was just the new world of media and social media and mass communications and interactions, and everybody has got a podcast and everybody's got a blog, and people have got 50 million Twitter followers and they can influence the world with them. It was just simply impossible. But they also knew something else. They knew that Hillary Clinton was going to be president. That's what they thought. And they felt that she was going to disclose. And they knew that that would be bad if they did not, if the military intelligence complex was still sitting on the fence or saying not helping, and the politicians disclosed, they were then going to throw the military intelligence complex under the bus. They were going to blame everything on them and take all the credit. We're the truth tellers. They lied to you for 64 years. Go to the Pentagon and egg their windows, whatever. And that's not how they see themselves. They see themselves as the defenders of the country, which they are. And so they felt action needed to be taken. But what could they do? They certainly could not act while working for the Pentagon or working for any agency. That would be the end of their careers. It would be illegal. So they were simply limited. But they came up with an interesting idea. What if an NGO, a non-government organization, is formed, made up of former members of the military intelligence complex, people no longer on the government payroll, with all their experience and all their gravitas and resume, and they took action? Well, you see, that would be legal. But that group would certainly have to have a lot of support within the military intelligence complex. In other words, they need backup. In other words, this group was possible because there are a lot of people inside the DOD and elsewhere that are backing them up. Now, how that is taking place, I don't know. But the DOD, this is not an official policy of the DOD. It's not official policy of the CIA. And I believe when this website went up, they didn't know it was coming. And it caught them by surprise. There's a lot of evidence for that. And I'm sure they were not happy. A lot of elements within the military intelligence complex were not happy. And so this organization needed to act quick. And so I was waiting to see, well, what are you going to do? Because if you don't do something quick, you're going to disappear real fast.
Yeah.
And so what happened is in 60 days, they had delivered enough information to the New York Times for three authors, Leslie Kane, Eileen Cooper, Ralph Blumenthal, to write, after vetting all the information, write two groundbreaking articles, which I think you know about, I think your listeners know about. And those articles literally completely altered the disclosure process forever. I like to refer to them as the Rubicon. That day, December 16th, 2017, the disclosure process crossed the Rubicon. There was no going back. There would be no retrenchment. There would no be like what happened in 1969, Condon Report, or any of that nonsense. Huh. It was straightforward to disclosure. It was just a matter of how long it would take.
Right.
And so it I believe it was supposed to happen quick, which would have been ideal for them. They created a corporation, a benefits corporation, to raise money. They raised $2.5 million. They probably anticipated raising 10, 20 times that much. And then when Clinton became president, given all the press that had followed her about the ET issue during her campaign, all the times that she and her campaign people had to speak to the issue, which was being caused by me. I'm sorry, but that was me. I'm not trying to get a trophy or something. The point is that my publicist, the legendary Janet Donovan, and I, who went after the media on the ET connection to the de facto next president, which would have been talked about and put into presented to the media for 20 years, which they simply would not engage. But this time it was a story, and they started engaging that story. They started writing articles about her connection to the ET issue and her husband's and John Podesta's. And when the press contacted them, tried to contact them to get their comments, they would not respond. They mm-hmm. stonewalled them, mm-hmm. which guaranteed the press that to the press that there was a story here. And so more stories started coming out, and they were forced to respond to them. And every time Podesta said something, or Hillary said something, or Obama said something, or Russman, President Clinton said something, it generated even more articles. By the time of the election, 400 articles in mainstream print media connecting her and her husband and Podesta to the ET issue had been printed and published. All 400 of those articles can be found on my website in the project section, 2016 election campaign. All 400 of them. That's never happened before. Nothing even remotely close to that has happened before. And it was being driven by myself and my publicist out of Washington, D.C., using every contact that I'd ever made in the previous 18 years. Now, she didn't win. And so this whole project was completely blown up. Mm-hmm. And it hadn't been announced yet. We knew something was happening because of the WikiLeaks emails that were hacked out of Podesta's computer and delivered to the world in October.
Right.
And there was some hints about it from Tom DeLonge, the eventual CEO of this company, to George Knapp, I think in March of 2016, March 26, I think. But we didn't know the details, and we didn't know the name. And so it all blew up. It took 10 months for them to finally decide to go ahead and launch. Why did it blow up? Because, first of all, the president wasn't Hillary Clinton. Clinton, I think, intended to disclose. The new president, I don't think, had the slightest intention to disclose, didn't even know anything about the issue. Not to mention the fact that they recognized that that election outcome was going to generate probably, almost certainly, some of the most deep chaos in American history politically, that it was going to be a very strange time. Well, and you try to launch a project like this into a Category 4 political hurricane. It took them 10 months to make the decision, but they ultimately decided to launch on October 11, 2017. However, unlike I think the original plan, they were going to move a little slower. I don't think their intention was let's slam dunk this and get disclosure. I think they said we're going to move forward, we're going to do things, we're going to go to the New York Times, we're going to do the unidentified series on History Channel. Eventually we'll start giving interviews. And they just kind of slow walked it, hopefully until the political chaos settled down. How long that would take, they didn't know. Mm-hmm. And what happened, of course, oh, by the way, and then any idea of doing it, say, in the last months or year of the Trump administration completely went out the window when the pandemic arrived.
Yeah.
So essentially it had to wait until at least after the next election, depending upon the outcome. Well, we know what the outcome was. It was a complete change of political leadership, House, Senate, and White House.
But then take into account the fact that the reporter, forget his name, brought it up to President Biden, and he kind of sloughed it off and said, well, go talk to Obama about it, and said, come on, let's go.
He had to slump it off.
Yeah.
He couldn't say anything serious at this point, because that's not what's going down. That's not the way things are unfolding. Mm. That would have been a big mistake, politically and otherwise. Well, so ignore his comment, right? It wasn't awful, but he is not prepared to address that. He's not supposed to.
Well, I was disappointed in that.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying don't be.
I can understand where they're coming from or where he's coming from, where the government's coming from. But I was quite disappointed. And now it might take time. Granted.
Oh, I can tell you how long it's going to take. But what I'm saying is that the situation politically after Biden takes office in January 20, the Congress essentially is newly formed in January 3, despite the insurrection, which was new. I hadn't had that before. Yeah. I'm officed a few blocks from the White House, so I got a pretty good picture of that.
Yeah.
And it was one of the greatest national disgraces in our country. And we've had some major disgraces, let me tell you. Anyway, the point is that in spite of that, the situation clearly was going to start stabilizing pretty quickly. Not only that, but in addition to that, we started to make progress with the virus. And one could project that the status of the pandemic would start to mitigate pretty soon. And that's happening. Obviously, we're moving quickly towards a much more open country where we can conduct business appropriately. And so based on all of that, things started moving fast, very fast. And so there's so many events taking place related to the disclosure small d process that I am barely able to keep up.
Right.
But, and we don't have time to get into all of that. Again, it's all the media has covered it, and the articles are up on my website right now. You go read them all. But here is what I believe is happening and what all of this is referring to. Christopher Mellon of the To the Stars Academy and Luis Elizondo and Steve Justice a few weeks ago they left the To the Stars Academy. They're now independent, private citizens. Why did they do that? Because prior to their leaving, Christopher Mellon, again, as I mentioned, was taking witnesses up on Capitol Hill and giving private briefings to members of Congress, almost certainly focusing on the members of certain key committees. Intel Committee, House and Senate. Armed Services Committee, House and Senate. Homeland Security Committee. Maybe the Space and Technology Committee in the House. These key committees. Almost certainly focusing on them to brief them on the developments written up in the New York Times and other developments relating to the UAP issue.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you do that? And these were off the record, no press, no press release. Why does that happen? Why does that ever happen? There's only one reason it happens. You brief them to prepare for hearings on the subject, period. You're not up there to share a glass of wine or have lunch. You're not up there to just tip them off so they'll be your friend or make friends on the Hill. You do it to prepare for briefings.
Right.
Going back, and this was going on in 2019, 2020, a long time. Going back, same time period, we know that Luis Elizondo was being approached by many, many military witnesses. We'd heard from Fravor and Day and so many of the other Nimitz witnesses and some others. Some of them, new ones, were put up on the Unidentified show on History Channel, 14 episodes. But the fact is that that Times article and the Unidentified show and everything that was being written about the To the Stars Academy and what was going on was lowering the bar way down for those to come forward who prior to that simply did not want to take the risk. In other words, people throughout the entire military intelligence community and services, and both active and retired, though retired is more likely, as well as people around the world. Anybody connected to this issue, anybody in military or government that's ever had a direct encounter with this issue in one form or another, kind of learned or understood that the door had been open.
Mm-hmm.
And if they wanted to walk through it, there would be no repercussions. And I believe scores of these people started contacting the TTSA, and that would mean Luis Elizondo. He hasn't admitted to that. Well, no, actually, I think at one point he commented about the fact there have been – somebody commented they've gotten many, many, many contacts. So what is this? So what? What does it matter? Because what you would do – is you would vet these contacts. You would say, okay, and learn what you can about them and try to confirm their experience. therefore you would have a very good witness to testify before Congress.
Right.
All right. And so I am saying that Elizondo and others within the TTSA for a substantial period were literally collecting military witnesses to UAP phenomena. Mm-hmm. So let's put that together. You've got witnesses, you're preparing the Congress for hearings. What are the hearings going to be about? They're going to be about UAPs. Who are the witnesses going to be? They're going to be military, former and active military personnel. All right. And the, and what is the basis for these hearings? National security. So I am saying that the game all along, the agenda all along, was to get national security based hearings on the UAP subject in front of Congress, starting with the Intelligence Committee and the Senate for military witnesses. Right. And once those hearings start, hearings that will be watched by hundreds of millions of people, because they're going to be televised, in case anybody's wondering about that.
Right.
Hundreds of millions of people are going to watch those hearings. It then provides the basis for the president in a very constructive and favorable way to finally end this truth embargo. And how will it happen? Essentially, the hearings will go on for X number of days, might even go on for weeks. There will be more than one committee involved, I assure you, because there are a whole lot of people on the Hill want to get a piece of this history. And that's fine. And the hearings may vary depending upon the committee that they're that are presenting them. They'll cover different aspects of the national security dimension of this. At some point, the president then is perfectly positioned to come before the American people and say something as simple as this. I have been watching this testimony with you these past weeks. It is compelling. I have talked with key people at the Pentagon. I have talked with top congressional leaders. And we have come to the consensus that this testimony does indeed confirm that this phenomena, at least the important parts of it, are extraterrestrial in origin. Mm-hmm. Period. Okay. That's it. That's disclosure. Capital D.
Capital D.
Whatever else the president says after that is post-disclosure. Mm-hmm. Whatever hearings happen after that are post-disclosure. Mm-hmm. And there will be many. That is what has been the goal all along. But there is a problem. In order, it was supposed to happen quickly, I think. Launch in late November, December of 2016. Meanwhile, Secretary Clinton or President-elect Clinton is getting deluged with reporters trying to find out more about why they've kept talking about the UAP issue, which she fends off because she's not in office yet. No problem. Wait till I get in the White House. She gets in the White House. The reporters really descend on her, say, okay, we want to know why you were talking about what's going on. Meanwhile, the articles appear in the New York Times, same ones, only 2016, not 2017, and it's over. Boom. The hearings will get held right away. Mm. And so all of this would have been done probably by, I don't know, March, April of 2017. Mm. Everybody wins, including the TTSA, to say the least. But history intervened.
Yeah.
And it all got dragged out for four more years. It's not been a fun for them. The TTSA people were forced to hang out there for four more years. Mm. They had given up a lot to do this. They had made sacrifices. They had put themselves at risk. Now they're subject 4 years of trolling and skeptics and other people pounding on them from the internet, right? That's not, wasn't in the plan. However, now we're there. And so this is what's going down. And what you can expect, I believe, to learn now is that there's going to be a lot more articles. There's going to be more people coming forward, like Brennan, like Norquist, like Admiral James Woolsey, former CIA director, suddenly saying, you know, I don't think we can explain that stuff. They weren't saying that 20 years ago.
No.
They were blowing it off.
So
you're going to see more of that. You're going to see maybe some of the elements of government The Air Force hasn't said anything yet. They're going to have to get on board here pretty soon because they're going to take a huge beating once disclosure takes place. The Air Force has an awful history on this issue. Right. It's just not good. And then the report is going to be delivered between now and June 25. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're waiting for. That's why Biden has to be silent. He can't say anything ahead of this. The report will get delivered. It will have in it some of the things the New York Times just reported. And it will have other stuff. But overall, we get the picture. It right. will be helpful. It will not say there's extraterrestrials here. But it will be helpful. It will be constructive. And it will emphasize the national security issue. And then the stage is now completely set. The table is completely set. For Marco Rubio and Mark Warner, probably together, to announce that it's time, we think based on the report from the Pentagon and briefings we have received, it is time to hold full congressional hearings on this issue, and they will announce that they're going to hold such a hearing within such and such a time frame. Expect that to happen.
All right.
And then after that, boy.
Stand back, right?
It will trigger the full feeding frenzy, the full media feeding frenzy. We're not in a feeding frenzy now. A full media frenzy is pretty remarkable thing to behold. I've lived through a couple of them. One of the most notable in American history is the Monica Lewinsky scandal. Yeah. When the media went literally into full frenzy. They were out of their minds. You couldn't cross the street without risking a chance of being run over by a media truck.
Right. Steve, I have to take a minute.
Okay.
2 seconds. Once again, to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And I'm David Twitcher. You're listening to We Are Not Alone, and we're interviewing activist Steve Bassett. So, Steve, we're running low on time here, unfortunately, because we could talk about this all day, but yeah. I had one question. Have you been following the Skinwalker Ranch on History Channel?
Yeah, it's an interesting show. It's intriguing. Yeah. They've had some things that have come up that I can consider very, very interesting. They've also done some stuff which is totally ridiculous. But it's a fun show. It's a very popular show. And what impact it will have on the UAP-ET issue, I do not know. Mm-hmm. But I assure you, in that regard, it's very small factor. I mean, there's the other things happening that are much more.
They seem to have suggestions of portals, other dimensional portals. Yeah. Would you say that the UAP phenomenon is extraterrestrial, other dimensional, or a bit of both? ET coming.
The odds of it being just interdimensional are too low to be measured, but they're just very small. Mm. So obviously, the odds of it being both are very, very small. Mm. The odds of it being these are intelligent beings from another planetary system. What can I say? 99.999. I mean, that's just what it is.
Well,
it's not complicated.
The question of how do they get here from there when we can't get there from here is kind of naive. But I think the answer is, and at least in my personal experience, and others who have witnessed the same thing with the UAP, that they've been time and space and come through a porthole, a wormhole.
Yeah, the odds are just, again, the idea of wormholes and interdimensional travel, a wormhole is not interdimensional travel, but some think that it requires some sort of interdimensional technology to create it. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. But wormhole is a sci-fi thing. The idea of creating wormholes is so out there in terms of technologically, what we know technologically. that it's hard to even comment on. Same thing with time travel. It's great sci-fi. It makes for great movies. We love it. I know that. Mm-hmm. But physics, in the area of physics, it's just ridiculously remote. However, the idea of non-relativistic travel, in other words, being able to travel from point A to point B, getting around relativity, when you talk about that general area, we are already closing in on that answer. Our advanced physicists are getting close. They've admitted it. It's out there. Look for it. They are traveling between two points, but they're getting around relativity. Right. Now, are they using a wormhole to do it? I don't think so. Time travel is ludicrously unlikely, but there is a way around relativity. And the ETs are the absolute proof of that. Because without that workaround, you want to come from one star to another, it can take 10,000, 20,000, 150,000 years. I'm sorry. That's not what's going on here. So they have a workaround, and we're close to that workaround. And I'll leave your audience with this teaser. One of the reasons that the ET escalated their engagement of our planet to a level unseen in modern times, I don't know about ancient times. I think ancient times there was plenty of contact, but that was ancient times. I mean, so what, 5,000 years ago? We're now fully global civilization that's already entered space in our solar system. So the modern times is all that matters. One of the reasons they escalated in modern times, which I'll include the 20th and 19th century, is because of two things. The two bombs we dropped on Japan,
right,
and the fact that they are well aware that our physics is creeping up on the workaround to relativity. And the activities of ETs, the degree of activities, the extent, and so forth, since then, have been directly connected to that.
Well, is that workaround, in your opinion, or, you know, taking it to guess at it, is that workaround bending time and space?
It may well be. The best science explanation that has been put out there and is being studied by our physicists is that they have figured out how to take space with you. So yeah. How can I put this? In other words, the best way it's described is this. You have a technology that can reach out in front of a craft and grab space and pull it in.
Right.
And so you don't actually move from point A to point B. You just move the point to you.
Right.
And you're doing this in rapid repetition. Right.
And I think that
very fast. All right.
This would appear to be, to our eyes, the wormhole, so to speak.
No, that's not a wormhole. We're talking about, it's not creating a hole in space. It is using the ability to alter space in rapid succession.
Okay.
So that you're moving along at an extraordinary speed because you're not traveling through it. You're bringing it to you. This is, it's not perfectly clear, but it gives you a rough idea.
Mm-hmm.
And the beauty of this approach, if it works, in other words, the physicists have done an analysis of this approach. If you could do it, it requires obviously a certain kind of tech. Is that, say you travel from Alpha Centauri to here in it's 3.4 light years, something like that, maybe four. So you travel, and let's say that this technology allows you to get here in 30 days. It could be 4 months. Again, 4 months between a star, that's no big deal. But let's say it's 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
When you get here, the clock will not have changed.
Right.
If you leave your planet at 3:30 on January 1, and when you arrive here, on July 1, the clock on your planet will say July 1.
Right.
There's no time dilation.
Instantaneously.
Not instantaneous. It takes time to do it, but your clock doesn't slow down.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Very.
Because if you were to travel to three quarters or fourth of of light speed between star systems. By the time you get here, which might take maybe 3 or 4 years, the time on your planet may have advanced 1,000 years because of time dilation.
Right.
And so that's a problem. That's another major problem with relativistic travel.
Right.
So if we had only one species engaging us, it might be that this is a species that does nothing but explore the solar system. They no longer operate from a home planet. They simply travel the galaxy. They travel, they don't care about time dilation. Maybe they're able to travel up towards light speed, 80%, whatever. If there was just one of those, that might be an explanation. Mm-hmm. But there are more than one. There are a number of species.
Possibly.
Probably the number of species that have engaged this Earth just in the last 10,000 years could be 10, 20, 30, 40, who knows?
Yeah.
So because of that, no. They have a workaround to relativity. They don't have to travel while observing special and general relativity. They don't have to. They can get around it. Not by magic, but by simply technology.
Right.
There's just no reason to think that Einstein's relativistic theory is the final, ultimate theory of travel in the galaxy. My God, he came up to it in the early 1900s. We were still in horse and buggies.
I think he was onto something, but not completely. You know what I'm saying?
That's, yeah, sure.
It was a lead up to it. So we're running low on time, Steve. I'm very sorry to say it, but I hope we come get you back on here another time especially when the big D disclosure happens. Until then, where can our listeners go to check out more of your work?
ParadigmResearchGroup.org. It's all there. Google Stephen Bassett. The link comes up, I think, pretty near the top. Paradigm Research. You got to learn how to spell paradigm. P-E-R-D-I-G-M. It's going to be a big word soon. ParadigmResearchGroup.org. And by the way, what's the name of your show again?
We Are Not Alone.
You chose wisely.
It was a local TV show for 10 years, and then, as I like to joke, I found that I was getting older and I have the face for radio, so I moved over to WHFR. So
that's okay, David, you chose well. Yeah. So that title should earn you some followers and some listeners going forward.
I hope so.
Because guess what? We are not alone.
We are not alone. Stephen Bassett, ParadigmResearchGroup.org. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a good one.
My pleasure.
And if you have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. Please check out my website, which is ufoimplications.com. That's ufoimplications.com. And stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again on our new day and time, which is the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. That's the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. Until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.